AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We turn our attention to the Southeast Metro. Our Democrat of the day is running for House seat 41B. Tina Fulch is kind enough to join us to talk about her campaign and what she wants to accomplish down in the Hastings area. Hi, Tina. How are you?
Hi. Thanks for having me. Jeez, this is exciting.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm glad you had some time today. We should mention 41B. This is with the redistricting. This basically is all of Hastings for the most part. I mean, maybe a few houses out of it, but for the most part, it's there. And part of Cottage Grove, Denmark Township. It's a nice little concise area. It seems like redistricting has made it a little bit more of a concise district. Is that a good way to say it?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is that we lost some of the areas around Afton,
okay. And
which were very rural, and it made it super difficult for door knocking, you know, to get out there because the lots are so large, you know, where they're acres apart. And so, yeah. So from that perspective, as a candidate, it's nicer that it's tighter, more succinct neighborhoods, yes.
So I usually start these interviews out with the real easy one here. Why don't you take some time and tell exactly your story? Who exactly is Tina Fulch?
Sure. Yeah. You know, I'm originally here from Hastings, born, raised, graduated. And then after finishing my graduate degree, I ended up moving back into our school district, but I was on the north side of the river, which is in southern Cottage Grove. And so I spent 16 years on that side of the river and decided to move back into town here. And so currently, you know, I am a city council member, have been for the past 6 years, and I really love my community. I'm really well established, busy being on such groups like as our local YMCA and our local chapter of the American Association of Women, University Women, and also I serve on our Dakota County Broadband Board as a director representing our city on that. And so I think that there is, really strong bonds here in our community. And having spent time, you know, living also in Cottage Grove, I have a lot of understanding of the issues that folks are facing on that side of the river as well. I served on their planning commission for three years and have some relationships with their local elected officials currently. And so, yeah, I feel like I'm in a really good position, you know, to have a lot of insights about what the community needs are and who all, you know, a lot of the stakeholders are and how it is that we can work together productively moving forward.
You have been in an interesting position. I mean, Hastings, unfortunately, has not had the best press the last year.
No, right. It's
not. And I mean, now, first of all, I'm going to say this. Hastings is a cute town. I like Hastings. And it was a bit heartbreaking to hear about what had gone on down there. You know, it's one of these opportunities where I think there is a real chance here to say, okay, no, this is not what we are. We're better than this. And we are, you know, we're going to show you what we can do. And it's, you know, there've been more than a few people I've talked to down in the Hastings area that have said that, you know, no, this is Hastings is not Hastings. Let me show you what Hastings really is.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, I think a lot of that was some backlash about from the strides that we have been making locally. We have a group, we're now currently labeled Thrive, and so it's a collaboration between school district, the city, large partners within, you know, our community like the YMCA, you know, businesses and various nonprofit groups and such, and just, you know, just grassroots, just individuals within the community who have come together, and we've been trying to do education about, you know, why diversity, equity, and inclusion are really great things to make our community more welcoming, and through those kinds of educational outreach pieces that we've been doing, you know, it helps build, you know, community capacity and understanding how it is that we can strive to do better and be more welcoming. And so honestly, I think the bad press that we've had in some ways has been you know, a backlash or a response from a small group of individuals within the community who are, you know, that they don't believe that those values, you know, have a lot of merit, right? You know, where they want to instead, you know, turn things around and have fear-mongering and make statements about how it is that we don't want, you know, quote-unquote, those people and whoever those people, you know, may be, if it's LGBTQ issues or, you know, not being as, you know, culturally as accepting of others. You know, it is a sad, you know, state of affairs, and it's very troubling. But, you know, by no means is that, you know, the majority of individuals within our town. I mean, we have a lot of pride about lots of folks having, you know, a few generations, you know, of history within the community. And so that's true. But, you know, for the most part, I would say people are really care a lot about our community members and step up when, you know, folks are in need and such. And so there is an extremely strong sense of community where folks, maybe when they're done with school, they leave for a little while. I mean, it's amazing how many people come back and live in our community to raise their children, because mm-hmm. there is a small town feel to Hastings, which is, you know, relatively a larger community of about 26,000 people. Mm-hmm.
And it's its own town. I mean, it's for many years, I mean, it was well out of the metro area. It's been growing. The metro area has been growing closer to it, but it still is maintained. That's one of the things that's really cute about Hastings, is it still maintains that small town feel, which is really nice. I should mention, you do have the endorsement of the Stonewall DFL. So, you know, it's that's the kind of leadership we need down there in that district. That's for sure. Looking at your other endorsements, if I may, I'm just going to – you got Planned Parenthood endorsed you, Women Winnings endorsed you. I'm going to just get out of the way. Matt Burke, the lieutenant governor candidate, has been saying some pretty inappropriate things here. We've got a war going on right now with the overturning of Roe v. Wade, where women's rights, women's health is now something that Republicans feel as if they can just right away and be done with it. I'm going to let you talk about this and let you say what you have to say, because the reality is it's you know, we can't have people losing rights. That's not a good thing in this country.
Yeah, it is hard to believe. I'm 51 years old, and within my lifespan, I don't know anything other than, you know, the current, well, what had been, you know, the Supreme Court protecting women's constitutional rights. And so I'm completely in disbelief. You know, I'm a strong feminist myself. I graduated from the College of St. Catherine in St. Paul. And so I'm just flabbergasted that we've gotten, you know, to this point. And those remarks that were made by the candidate running for lieutenant governor, I had heard them, where he thought, you know, that, geez, those women, what was the statement about women shouldn't be wanting to have careers and all, you know, yeah. And how that was, that was some kind of play into, you know, supporting abortion rights and such. And I didn't even like put how together that whole logic was and all, but it was just, you know, astounding that he would even, you know, say such a thing, that women shouldn't be having, you know, careers of, you know, for their own financial well-being. I mean, it's just unbelievable, and just goes to really to show, you know, how out of touch, you know, the right has, you know, become. You know, the person who I am running against, unfortunately, has, you know, stated, you know, just statements that have, you know, blown my socks off, you know, where he's, you know, come out and said that, you know, he's the father of four boys, and geez, if he maybe had a girl, you know, and if she was brutally raped, you know, well, maybe I'd want to sit down with my clergy member and we'd perhaps want to have a conversation about, you know, how to proceed if, you know, she was, you know, pregnant. And, you know, and just the fact that they would just consider only in cases of brutal rape. I mean, really, seriously, how out of touch are these folks, where they have so little respect for the dignity of women and what it is that we, you know, go through, and just the fact that if it was any kind of unwanted, you know, touch or rape, that, you know, that it would have to be an extreme case where, you know, and then so let's legally define how it is that, you know, you would have an extreme case of brutal rape, you know, geez, you know, I mean, going into the specifics about what kind of torture would a woman have to go through for her to be able to actually be, get, you know, given the ability to abort a child. And so, you know, it's just unbelievable that these folks care so little about women's well-being, you know, from a healthcare perspective, you know, You know, I was reading, I was surprised it was a good chunk of women who actually have abortions already have, you know, a child. And it's the decision is rather a financial one where, you know, the time isn't right for them. And so they're, you know, proceeding, you know, to make the healthcare decisions that they need to. And so it is just astounding that we've gotten to this place where individuals who are so narcissistic about their own value systems, you know, that they feel so strongly that and care so little about the plight of women and how it is that, you know, that having reproductive rights, how significant that is in them being able to make, you know, decisions, not just about, you know, their family planning about, but for their financial well-being, you know, for the rest of their lives. Because, you know, heck, the truth is, the majority of women who do have unwanted pregnancies and see it to term, they don't give those children up. They keep them because we're all human beings, and how can you not love the child that grows inside of you over time? And so then they're tied to, you know, individuals who, you know, for 18 years financially and having to share custody with that child, you know, most oftentimes. And so just the life that's being, that's put out in front of them as a result of them not being able to have, you know, a decision about their own, you know, reproductive rights. And so it is a troubling time. And, you know, by golly, you know, that puts a lot of fire in my belly and makes me want to get out there on the doors and do all I can, you know, to fight for women's rights and get elected to our legislature. Because, you know, honestly, it's going to be the Minnesota legislature. It's going to be our governorship that's going to hold the line and keep it as women, you know, so women do have this constitutional right within our state to abortion care.
You know, I'm going to say this. This is you, but from your story there, and you're talking about your opponent talking about if his daughter was violently attacked, he'd go talk to the clergy. Just as me, as a dad, actually with two daughters, maybe you should talk to your daughter. How about that first before you go talk to the clergy? Maybe if your daughter was violently attacked, you might want to talk to her first and see how she's doing before you start going and allowing others. But that's just me. That's just me. I maybe you take care of the individual who is attacked. But that's just me. All right. I want to touch on another issue. You had mentioned this. I'm very glad Joe Biden, this new infrastructure bill, we've got money coming into the state for broadband. Broadband, Hastings is a perfect template of why we need to fight for broadband. This is not some, you know, up by Crane Lake on the northern border. This is a city by a large metro area. There are parts of the county, parts of the area out there that don't have good access to internet. This is something we're getting fixed right now. Talk a little bit about that, because we need that leadership, not just for, say, 41B, but for the entire state, that broadband is an important basic infrastructure element at this point.
Oh, yes, most definitely. Yeah, Hastings is interesting that within the city limits that we do have fiber that's laid, but really, it's just, you know, confined to the city limits. And so the townships that surround our community, they do not have fiber. They don't have cable. And so, yes, you know, I mean, it became quite evident, you know, during the pandemic where I'm sure all communities had, you know, similar situations that are outside of, you know, the core metro, where they had sections of their school district where kiddos didn't have internet, they didn't have fiber, they didn't have good connectivity to be able to, you know, do their coursework. And then, you know, furthermore, you know, the business community is also saying that it's such a need for their employees to be able to have the ability to work from home, you know, if need be, and be, you know, connected. And so from the perspective of being able to support students and being able to, you know, support businesses with, you know, their employees and families being able to do what they need to do on the internet is extremely important. And so for me, I actually, you know, if I was just wearing that city council member hat, I wouldn't have, you know, bothered, you know, to be within the broadband board because Hastings is well connected inside of the city limits. But geez, you know, as a parent who's had two children, you know, graduate, you know, in the last couple of years from our high school and just being so connected, you know, to understanding, you know, the needs of our school system and having those conversations with our school board members and such, but how important it is for all of our rural areas to be connected. And so that's why I've stepped up. I've been serving, this is my fourth year on the Dakota Broadband Board, and I can tell you it has been extremely challenging. About a year and a half ago, we had some three key positions that are memberships. You know, so what it is, it's a joint powers initiative between the Dakota County and then the it's about, I think it's 9 or 10 of the cities, you know, the large cities in Dakota County, where we came together and we decided to merge all of our fiber assets so that they could be better managed overall, you know, and locates being done for utilities and having an outside firm, you know, manage all of the construction projects around them and such, and then so that we had redundancy for a business continuity perspective. So that it was really an operational standpoint that we came together. But everyone who originally was on the group when we began, we all fully understood the importance of making sure that we were striving forward to provide fiber connectivity to our residents, to our business sectors, you know, that didn't currently have it. And, like, that was a long-term goal. And so, unfortunately, about a year and a half ago, as I was beginning to say, is that we had three key individuals that came onto the board and who have to be Republican-leaning because they have been against wholeheartedly even having the broadband board be in existence. And they've been fighting and, I want to say, weaseling their way into completely dissolving the group. And so they are our county board member. And then also two individuals from two of the key cities, Burnsville and Lakeville, who have, they've destroyed the Dakota Broadband Board and all of the good that we could be doing for our community. It's currently beginning to dissolve because of a few key individuals who do not want to see fiber access as a goal and the government having any kind of coordination with the private sector and expanding the network to other parts of our county. And so it's very disheartening, and it really goes to show that folks should be super paying attention to who it is that they're electing to represent them, because, you know, there's a lot of folks who do get elected, and they're not there. They're not serving the needs of the greater good. They're serving an agenda of a small subset of, you know, of whatever community, be it the, you know, the corporations, the big cell phone companies, the big, you know, the big groups, corporations, like, you know, oh, I shouldn't name names, and so, well, I'm not going to do that. But
it'd be like today denying electricity or denying mail service to a residential neighborhood. I mean, it's such a basic tenet. And the reality is, you're exactly right. If you don't pay attention to these things, you're going to get people in there that are going to have an agenda that are going to be like, no, we're not going to do this. And by the way, if the private sector was doing it correctly, the government wouldn't have to step in at this point. That's the problem, is the fact that you guys, the private sector hasn't done it. And yet, so the argument is like, well, the private sector will do it. It's like, no, they're not. And that's just the case. I mean, it was, exactly. Tina, you and I could talk all day. You're a hoot. I like you. 41B, I want to get people down there. Once again, this is Hastings. This is a seat that the Republicans are going to throw everything in the kitchen sink at. The DFL can pick this seat up. It is a good seat. It's a good area, the metro area for the DFL. I want to drive people down to your campaign website so if they can volunteer and donate. Tina, how do they do that? Where do they find your webpage?
Oh, thanks for asking that question. Yes. So go to tinafolch.com. That's Tina, T-I-N-A, and then Folch is F-O-L-C-H. And then .com. And I actually am so proud of our website. I have the best webmaster a gal could ask for. We have lots of information on there. And so it's easy to find, you know, the donate button, but then also to sign up for, if you'd like to get involved in the campaign, be it, you know, door knocking or doing lit drops, taking a yard sign, you know, those kinds of activities. But really, you know, I think you're totally right. This seat is flippable. It's been held by the Republicans for the past 40 years. We have never had a woman as our House rep at the Capitol to represent this area here. And so I think that we're prime. It's, you know, I think that there's enough folks who are, you know, fired up about all of the divisive nature of, you know, that right-wing rhetoric that we're seeing. And then furthermore, I don't know if folks have realized that out in this neck of the woods, the extreme right has taken over the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah.
Even moderate Republicans have lost their incumbent moderate Republicans have lost the endorsement of the Republican Party, and you know they're on the primaries, and so we'll see how they end up faring, you know, going through the primary process. But it's very likely that those far right candidates, all of them, will see it through and make it to Election Day.
If you are in a district that's a relatively safe DFL seat, help your local DFLer, but then get down to 41B. Tina Fulch, that's TinaFulch.com, TinaFulch.com. Tina, I really appreciate the time. Thanks for deeming the Democrat of the Day today, okay?
Awesome. Thanks again. Hope you have a great day. Take care, everyone.
All righty. We'll take a break, wrap up the show. When we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.